First, Florida's Republican Governor Ron DeSantis claimed credit last week for flying about 50 mostly Venezuelan migrants to Martha's Vineyard, a small vacation island in Massachusetts. Republican governors in states like Texas and Arizona have been using the tactic for months, busing or flying migrants to northern cities, mostly under the leadership of Democrats. But immigrants' rights advocates and Democrats have called the practice cruel and possibly illegal, with some saying it could amount to human trafficking. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about this move by some governors of states in the South? Do you think the U.S. needs to change its strategy on the southern border? What would you change about the immigration system if you could? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Elise Cohen is an associate professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Elise, welcome back to the show.
It's great to be with you, Rob.
Before we dig into some of the specifics, Elise, what's been your reaction as you see these reports of migrants from Venezuela and elsewhere being bused or flown to cities often unprepared for their arrival?
Yeah, that's a great point you raise about the lack of advance notice here. So I think if it were really about addressing the policy problem of the influx of migrants along the southern border, we wouldn't see the lack of coordination ahead of transporting the migrants, which that alone sort of suggests it's not really about addressing the policy problem, but more about messaging and symbolic politics, even sort of picking up on the urban-rural divide, since a lot of these Democratic-leaning so-called sanctuary areas are in much more urban centers in the country.
I want to give a listen to Florida Governor DeSantis talking last night at a Republican campaign event in Green Bay. Here's what he had to say about the migrants that Florida sent to Martha's Vineyard last week.
They said they're a sanctuary city. They say that nobody, no human being is illegal. Everyone's welcome. So this is a place, there's jobs available, there's hotels and Airbnb available. And honestly, these were folks who got the transport that Biden totally abandoned. They were homeless. They were hungry. So they hit the jackpot to be able to be in the wealthiest sanctuary jurisdiction in the world.
Elise, you mentioned the political symbolism there. Do you think there's a case to be made, as Governor DeSantis is claiming, that, well, maybe the people who were sent to Martha's Vineyard were better off?
Yeah, it's interesting because you could hear the way he was cueing the crowd to cheer when he was talking about the idea that these are very wealthy enclaves. And we also saw, by the way, in the past fall, Senator Ted Cruz introduced federal legislation that was advocating something very similar, the Stop the Surge Act, as he called it, to relocate migrants in the southern border to Democratic-leaning enclaves. And when he was doing press releases on that, he gave speeches very similar to what you just played in that clip, where he was saying, you know, these are the places that Democratic elites hold their cocktail parties. So there's really this partisan antagonism. There's this sort of mocking aspect to it that seems to go beyond just what's best for the interests of the migrants or what's best for relocating them to places where they'll have more services available.
Who are we talking about here? Who are the migrants who are being relocated by bus or plane here?
Well, what's interesting with this case is, unlike the past couple of years where we've seen the majority of migrants crossing from Central America and the Northern Triangle countries, we have a lot more now from Venezuela and from Cuba. So there's been kind of a change in the who. We also see a lot more single adults, still a lot of families and children. But in Venezuela, the crisis has become so severe, it's being termed one of the worst peacetime crises in the past 100 years, perhaps even on par or worse than the Great Depression in the United States. So that can help us understand why so many people have left Venezuela. There's water shortages, food scarcity, constant power blackouts, and not even access to medical care or basic medicines. And we saw that around 94% of Venezuelans last year were falling into poverty levels, which is just a really unprecedented level of poverty in the country. So that can sort of help us understand why the majority in this group is coming from Venezuela.
Let's talk about asylum seekers now. I believe some of the people who were transported fall into that category. Can you talk about the sort of legal protections someone who's claiming asylum here in the U.S. does and doesn't have?
Absolutely. Asylum is a legal right, and it's protected not only under international law, but also under U.S. law. So these migrants, many of them have filed for asylum, and they have been released legally from federal immigration authorities as they await their asylum cases. And part of asylum law is that there's freedom of movement. And so what that means is these asylum seekers need to periodically check in with federal immigration authorities, like a local ICE agent, for example, but they are permitted to travel throughout the U.S. There's nothing that would require them to be in a certain jurisdiction, particularly just based on, you know, partisanship or that it's a liberal-leaning jurisdiction.
We're talking to Elise Cohen, Associate Professor of Political Science at UW Green Bay, looking at migrants in the U.S. Being transported by bus or plane to northern cities coming from places like Texas, or being transported by Florida or Arizona. You could join in with your reactions to this story, your questions about it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. At least the basic notion, if it was maybe being done in an organized way of arranging different places around the country for migrants who are maybe waiting for their processing of their asylum request, is that such a bad idea? Should we be spreading people out around the country instead of concentrating them more toward the southern border?
Yeah, that's a really great question, Rob, because the federal authorities have also looked at relocation as a way to help with overcrowded facilities. And they have considered plans, you know, internally within the Department of Homeland Security, for example, of how they could kind of effectively coordinate and move migrants to different regions that are a bit more north of the southern border towns. But that was something that was done, like you said, with coordination in mind. And it wasn't something that was made politically available as any kind of political statement or symbolic politics. So it's sort of different in that way. But the idea of coordination, I think, is what's really key, as well as the idea of deception, the extent to which there seems to have been an element of deception in enticing the migrants to board the chartered planes, and even with Governor Abbott in previous months in enticing some of them to board the buses, sending them to New York or Washington, D.C. or Chicago. So I think that's what's really key. And if we're looking at the legality, we're going to need to get more info on how much these migrants were promised versus what the reality was when they arrived.
Right. There are going to be legal challenges, it looks like, from lawyers stepping up to represent the migrants. On that very issue of consent to be moved here and the idea that they were deceived, I think we're going to discover new interesting points of American law. What is your read on that issue and how important the question of deception is here?
Yeah, it is a really murky gray area because human trafficking itself usually involves coerced or, you know, lured under false pretenses, but for the intent of some sort of commercial gain, whether it's labor exploitation, sexual exploitation. And in this case, I doubt they will be able to produce evidence of that kind of intent since it's more about the political statement of it. But there is that commonality of deception or luring them under false pretenses. So there may be more of a basis for something like deprivation of liberty or fraud. So these kinds of lawsuits that the migrants themselves would file are more likely, I think, to gain traction for criminal charges than anything the Democratic lawmakers are proposing in pressuring the Department of Justice. I think it would really need to unfold from the migrants themselves as the clients, kind of saying they were lured and they would not have given their consent to board those planes if they realized where they were going and that there were not really job and housing and schooling opportunities where they were headed.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Pete is with us now in Marinette. Pete, hello.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What did you want to bring up?
I just find it interesting that none of these points were brought up until these people were sent to Democrat-leaning and liberal cities, right? I still believe this is a pure case of not in my backyard. These places like Texas and Arizona are overrun by these people, and all of the resources there are stretched to the limit. They don't have the jobs. They don't have the police. They don't have the medical care. None of that stuff. You see these people dying, trying to cross over. They're dying in the deserts because we can't handle the influx. But nobody seemed to really get up in arms until it started going to the Democrat areas. So I'm curious how you can explain to me how this is not a case of just simply not in my backyard.
Pete, thanks for the call. Elise, what do you think?
Yeah, well, Pete actually raises some really important points about the double standards, even with Democratic policymakers. And he's right that Democrats themselves tend to be a little more quiet when we look at the federal policies of something very similar to what DeSantis has done, because DeSantis said, well, I've sent people into Texas to intercept them before they can arrive on the territory of Florida, right? To then intercept their journey and reroute them so they don't come to Florida state territory. Well, the U.S. as a federal entity has been doing that for decades, since the 1990s, with prevention through deterrence, intercepting migrants, as the caller, as Pete mentioned, you know, in the deserts or in the sea areas, pushing them out away from U.S. territory so they can't make it to U.S. territory to claim asylum. So there is that hypocrisy, and that including Democratic members of Congress and Democratic presidents, that's actually just been a national policy we've had for a long time. But liberal groups have often pointed that out, and I think migrant advocacy groups have been pointing that out for a while. It just hasn't gotten as much attention.
Thanks for the call, Pete. We're talking to Elise Cohen, Associate Professor of Political Science at UW Green Bay, with us to talk about why some Republican governors have been busing or flying migrants to Democratic cities in the north. Questions about whether the practice is legal. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What is your reaction to all of this? What do you want to know about the rights migrants do and don't have when they enter the U.S.? Do you want to see more sanctuary cities defined in various ways across the country? What questions do you have for our guest? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Verrett. Right now, we're picking up our talk about immigration and why some southern governors are sending migrants by bus or plane to cities in the north. Elise Cohen stays with us at UW Green Bay. You can join in with your reactions to this news story, your questions about it, what you'd like to see change, if anything, on U.S. immigration policy, especially at the southern border. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Back to your calls now. Chris is with us in Oshkosh. Chris, hello.
Chris, hello.
Yes, good afternoon.
What did you want to bring up, Chris?
Yeah, when I, it's readily apparent to me and just about everyone I speak to of both political stripes that our economy in the United States is completely dependent on, I don't know what term to use politically correct, the guest workers, alien workers, you know what I mean. I'm not sure what to call it.
Sure.
For decade after decade, president after president of both parties, this has been a third rail of American politics. Nobody is willing to address the problem. The problem, as I see it, is that an awful lot of these foreign workers are operating under false credentials, working for people, drawing a paycheck in a very conventional fashion. This means they're paying into Social Security. That is money that they will never see back. So we have 10 million odd workers who are contributing and making a false increase in the level of Social Security funding. That makes it very, very prickly for our government to find a way to legitimize these workers and still protect Social Security. Your thoughts?
Chris, thanks for the call. Elise?
Yeah, Chris is right that the economy is very much dependent on this kind of labor market. And this is why I think for people that are really focused on solving immigration as a policy problem, and for a long time in the early 2000s, there was bipartisan support. How can we create legal pathways for people to have the temporary residency, for people to meet sort of rise and fall of labor demand? And what we saw was really after the rise of the Tea Party during the Obama administration, there was a big shift where it was no longer about the kind of practical aspects that Chris is bringing up in terms of the policy solutions, but it was really more about the politics of it and what each party is purporting to stand for, and really refusal to compromise over things like he's saying with how we could address the economic side of this. So I think that's what really does get lost, is we don't have these kind of very pragmatic discussions of what's best for the economy on the policy side. It's really much more about political messaging and symbolism and the identity around immigration issues.
Chris, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Mike joins us now in Shorewood. Mike, hi.
Hi, everyone. I appreciate the show today. I guess my comment is more about racializing or scapegoating, you know, people of color. I just wonder, you know, if this was Ukrainian refugees or asylees, how this just wouldn't happen. Of course, that Santos and these other governors are using, you know, people from South America or from Mexico to sort of make these political points. And my last comment would just be, we can handle the numbers. And I agree with the other callers that, you know, if we can handle 15,000 Afghan refugees in Wisconsin and get them, you know, moved around the country, we should be able to find the political will to do this. Thank you.
Thanks for that call. Lisa, to that first point, what do you think of Mike's argument that this is especially targeting people from Latin American backgrounds?
Yeah, the racialized aspect is really crucial. I should mention that when Senator Ted Cruz introduced the Stop the Surge Act last year, he did that right after, if listeners remember, last fall of 2021, there was the large arrival of thousands of Haitian asylum seekers and migrants under that bridge in Del Rio, Texas. And so it was really in the shadow of that very specific concern about Haitians that Cruz introduced the legislation. And we also need to give credit, of course, to former President Trump, who actually was the one to first propose busing migrants to liberal sanctuary cities in 2018 and 2019. He was advocating very much for that and using a lot of that racialized language that Mike is mentioning around Central American asylum seekers as a threat or as related to criminality and gangs. So yeah, we really cannot untether this from the way people see who these immigrants are and why they see them as threatening in their communities.
Thanks for that call. Scott is with us now in Milton. Scott, hello.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I can't be more proud of Governor Ron DeSantis and Greg Abbott. I think for the first time, the Republican Party is actually punching up and not letting themselves getting steamrolled, and they're bringing the issue to the Democrats' front door, literally doing it. And by doing that, it's exposing this issue of immigration, and Democrats are allowing immigration to be an issue that's touched on at the heart, and it's supposed to make you feel for these people, and I do, and I'd love to see our immigration system be reformed to make it streamlined, but as much as the Democrats have let down their voters, and they have not passed any sweeping legislation to make this problem easier, it's just been an executive issue, and allowing the Biden administration to pass to be able to open their borders and want to bring these people in just because they're seeking asylum and they want a better life. And as much as I want to see them improve their life, they need to go through it in a legal manner.
Scott, thanks for the call. To that last point, Elise, what are the options for doing, as Scott says, seeking a better life in a legal manner? How accessible is that?
Yeah, I think that Scott's bringing up this point where even liberals within the Democratic Party have sort of pushed back on the fact that the Biden administration hasn't really come through on a lot of the policy promises around helping ease the journey from asylum to legal status. We did see an attempt to halt Title 42 that was just immediately expelling people, even preventing them from having their asylum interviews at the southern border. However, that policy has been kept in place due to federal courts injunction. So there's a lot of frustration even among Democrats. And then you can hear Scott really is connecting with that Republican message, sort of standing up to that hypocrisy within Democrats. And Governor Abbott said something very similar, that he believes these relocation efforts really, quote, take the border to Biden. So I think that it's a moment where we could see some Republicans and Democrats might come together in being critical of Biden. But for the most part, Democrats are much more focused on the migrants being used as political pawns in this moment. So I think that part of the conversation will probably be a bit delayed until these migrants' needs are met more immediately.
Scott, thanks for that call. Time for one more caller. Daisy is with us in Madison. Daisy, hello.
Hi there. I'm calling in, I guess, just with, like, hoping for some clarification. I'm a teacher. I work with students and many families who are coming in, and they have come in legally. They are waiting for court dates that are sometimes backed up 2 years. And I have students who are hoping to apply for colleges or hoping to get a license, and they don't have the documentation they need to do so or to rent an apartment, for example. And I'm wondering if you could help me understand the root behind this problem. Is it the fact that courts are moving slowly or there's not enough people to process paperwork? And then if there's any other resources I can be pointing students to, I just feel like I would love to have more information to help these families move forward with their lives and not have to wait 2 years to potentially get a license, rent an apartment, apply.
Gotcha. Daisy, we just have a little over a minute left. Elise, what would you tell Daisy?
I think for Daisy's question, one of the biggest root causes is the backlog in the court cases. There's about 1.9 million pending court cases in the U.S. immigration courts. So hiring more judges, finding a way to invest more resources into that process would be key. And then if Daisy's looking for some resources, Voces de la Frontera is really active in Wisconsin for providing information on how to help with some of those possible student needs that Daisy's working with.
Daisy, thanks for that call. And Elise, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me, Rob.
That's Elise Cohen, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. She's with us today to talk about Republican governors sending migrants to cities controlled by Democrats. Questions over the goals of that tactic and the legality of it. Still time for you to share your thoughts. You can email ideas@WPR.org.